Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Dresser Show. There's no topic this program is afraid to address or investigate, whether it be social, political, or current events, including some very sensitive cultural issues of today. The views expressed by the host, guest, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views of this station. Now, step into the realm of clarity with your host, Michael Dresser.
Welcome back. I'm Michael. You're listening to the Michael Dresser Show. Patrick Coleman with us, President and Chief Operating Officer of Medivex. It's a company that acquires and develops potentially groundbreaking medical technology products that can improve the quality of patient life. Patrick, I welcome to the show.
Hello, Michael. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. When we're talking about Medivex, where did it start? Where did the idea come from?
Well, you know, Medivex really is kind of the product of the founder, Steve Gorlin. Steve is an investment banker who's been very successful in the biotech, medtech space over many, many years. Steve has proven himself in understanding the impact of promising technologies in the medtech and biotech space in very large market segments. And Steve has taken five or six companies really from zero to market caps of $2 to $5 billion. So very significant guy in developing the playbook and in growing companies in large market segments.
Now the products themselves, where do they come from? Did they come from research, people with ideas? Where did the products actually start?
Well, we have two categories of products within Medivex. The first one is actually a product that we're developing right now to treat a significant part of chronic back pain, and it's a surgical tool, a surgical device that's used to help reduce pain over a longer period of time with patients that have a condition called facet joint pain. And you have a number of facet joints in your spine, and this is a device that can treat this condition and has really proven in its concept to be quite effective. And so we're currently developing that product.
I was going to say, did the medical association, were they not so much aware of the device, but how did they treat it before? Where did they get to, and where was that point that the device took over?
Sure. This is a condition that's been treated for many years, but not very effectively with the tools that are available today. So all of the pain management physicians and spine surgeons and orthopedic surgeons who do spine work all acknowledge that the current ways of treating facet joint pain are not very effective. So this is a very good opportunity for our product, which we refer to as the Denervix device, to be a big market contributor in the future.
Okay, now who buys this? If I say who buys this, does the patient buy this, or does it come from the hospital, the doctors?
Yeah, this is what's referred to as a physician prescriptive device. So it's on the order and the sale of a physician. So it would be purchased by a hospital or by a clinic for the use by a physician to treat a patient. So it's not over the counter. And it's actually not FDA cleared quite yet, but in the future, the way it will be purchased by hospitals and clinics for the physician who uses them.
Okay. Now, by the way, when is it going to be available? And obviously, it won't be available this year, but it'll be available overseas too. So, when can people start taking advantage of this?
Yeah, the product will be introduced first outside the United States. The regulatory pathway outside the U.S. is a little bit easier than it is here in the U.S. I can't identify a particular date right now. We're a publicly traded company, so I can't issue any specific guidance on when exactly it will be available. But it will be available outside the U.S. before it will be inside the U.S.
Okay. Now, are there other products that you've developed that we're using now?
Well, actually, we have a second product, and actually there's two categories of medical technology that we're either introducing to the marketplace or will introduce. The first one is the Dynervix device for facet joint pain, and that's in an area of osteoarthritis, which affects many, many Americans in general. The second category is the area of safe patient handling and provider safety in hospitals. Now, hospitals are not the safest places in the world. The fourth leading cause of death in America is medical errors. And so we make a product, or we've actually acquired a company by the name of Streamline. It's a Minneapolis-based company we acquired last March, and they make a IV suspension pole called the Streamline IV Suspension System, or ISS, which actually holds critical IV pump equipment that are used to infuse drugs into patients through their IVs when they're being treated in hospitals.
Okay, so it combines it with the IVs then?
Right. It actually, the IV suspension system, the ISS, actually has a manner in which it carries the little IV pump boxes, which you or your listeners may have seen in ICU settings in hospitals or patient rooms. And many times patients are treated with two or three or four or six of these boxes at any one time, depending on how critically ill they are. And these little pump boxes infuse or push the drug through an IV tubing, through their IV into the patient's body. And so these boxes can be very cumbersome. They can be somewhat heavy. And when a patient is moved from one part of the hospital to the other for a test or for therapy or what have you, all their equipment's got to be moved with them. So it's very cumbersome for a nurse or a hospital transport person to move an ICU patient from one part of the hospital to the other and then back to their room. So the inventors were actually two college kids that were hospital transporters, and they saw a great need in this area because they were forced to have to manage all the patient's equipment when the patients were moved from their room to another part of the hospital and back.
Yeah, Patrick, interestingly enough, though, what you're saying is absolutely great. I think, you know, that everybody should know about it. But why haven't we known about this? Where do we find out? Because when you come down to it, how many people really know about Medivex?
Well, actually, we have a pretty robust a public relations campaign, as well as we are publicly traded on the NASDAQ under this trading symbol MD, V like in Victor X. And so actually I think there are quite a few people who are learning about us now. We just went public last December, and so we're relatively new to the public market. We actually have recently signed a distribution agreement, or actually a marketing agreement, for the Streamline IV suspension system with the largest bed manufacturer in the world.
Great. Now, if somebody has an idea, can they come to you?
Absolutely. We're very open to hearing about new innovative ideas that solve problems in medicine.
Yeah, what kind of things do come to you?
I'm sorry? Can you say it again?
I said, what kind of things do come to you? What kind of products? People, you know, they call up, they make appointments, they talk to you. What kind of concept, what kind of ideas are out there?
Yeah, there are ideas in the area of treating spine disorders. Other biotech products that are used to treat disease. Since we do have an established area that we want to compete in the spine and osteoarthritis area, we have a number of very small spine-related device companies that approach us, or that we approach them, because part of what we're trying to do is not only develop internally new products, but also to look to acquire other technologies that may be very promising.
Now, by the way, is this limited to the medical association, or can naturopaths, doctors, stepping right outside the given way of treatment, is it available to everybody to be an MD and have a prescription for it?
You mean as far as an idea to bring to us?
Yeah. No. Once it's done, to be able to use it with a patient.
Well, the Dynervix device that's used for treating facet joint or back pain has to be on the order of either an MD or an OD, osteopathic doctor. So those would be the two main physicians in the United States that would be licensed to use a device like ours.
Okay, so when we're dealing with medical technology, was there a definition of it before you got into the game? And when I say definition, you know, you go to certain areas and certain ability to be able to deal with the public, and everything seems to be categorized. Was there this kind of a category before you stepped in?
You mean a category in the types of products that we currently
have? As far as, you know, developing the medical process.
Yeah, well, you know, we operate in a very highly regulated area, and we're not just Medivex, but any medical technology company, and we're required to follow certain guidelines provided by the FDA and other governmental agencies. So they really kind of set the rules and the parameters on a number of things. So it's a pretty controlled environment.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be. Now, the relationship between or with Hill-Rom, what is that?
Yeah, that's a marketing agreement that we announced back in May, and Hill-Rom is the largest hospital bed provider in the world, and they also are a very, very strong provider of ICU beds as well, which is the space that we would sell and co-promote the Streamline IV Suspension System, or ISS, with their bed, since that robust IV pull solution actually attaches to a bed.
Now, by the way, with the programs that you have, is there an addition that you would want on this that it seems to be hard to get? You said it was really well regulated. Is there anything that you have that you would like to see applied but yet have trouble getting it through?
Not currently. Not currently. I think that all high-quality medtech or biotech companies, you know, from time to time, will find you know, the pathway a bit challenging in some areas. So those are just some of the checks and balances that the federal government places on all providers of medical technology, just to make sure that they're safe and effective. Because in the United States, a device has to be proven to be safe and also effective in treating a patient. Outside the U.S., many times you only have to prove that the product is safe, but it doesn't necessarily have to be effective. It's a different standard.
Yeah, now looking at your press release, I think it's important that the fascia joint syndrome, the program itself, significantly less costly than what's currently available, those options. That's very important. You know, you look at cost and everything skyrockets, but if you come in with something that actually works and is less expensive, that's something to sit back and take a look at.
Absolutely. In fact, the whole genesis behind the Genervix device was that we believe it's a longer-lasting treatment solution as compared to the current way that these patients are being treated. So that's a very big part of the value proposition to our customers.
Now, by the way, when we're really dealing with it and you've got the customers, they're coming in, they're doing... Are they at that stage where they know that if there's something new on the horizon, it's to be calling you to find out if there's anything new available? Are they always on the phone to you?
Yeah, absolutely. We're always available for providers to answer their questions. In fact, at the North America Spine Society in Chicago, Illinois, during the month of October, we actually conducted a cadaver laboratory with 17 surgeons, spine surgeons from the European Union, and actually demonstrated the product and had an opportunity to use it as well. So we were very pleased with the results of that cadaver lab training experience.
Wonderful. And by the way, because we have limited time, we're not over yet. I want to cover as much ground as I can. You are also the author of the Inventory Guide for Medical Technology, the book in and of itself. What do we get out of it?
Yeah, that's the Inventor's Guide for Medical Technology. In the past, I was a private practice in my own consulting firm, CG3 Consulting, and I authored the book with the idea that, and I had many times I had inventors that would approach approach our firm, physicians or other medical people or engineers who really did not have experience in bringing ideas to market. So I authored the book as a basic introductory tool to help educate them on the types of things that they needed to think about and to know about in order to bring a product to the market.
Now, okay, I picked the book up. I read it page by page, cover to cover. The essence of my takeaway, what is the core message up there?
I think the core message is that this, taking an idea literally from the napkin to the market, which is kind of the sub premise of the book, is much more difficult than what people think. And it's important that people have someone to help them through that process. And so that was really the idea of the book, to really start to educate them on the things that they needed to think about. And probably the most important thing is to have someone give them a hand and help them who's done it before.
Oh, absolutely, because when you come down to it, everything that we do is a learned skill. This is not something that we automatically know. And especially in today's world, when we are dealing with patient care that seems to be lacking in so many areas, this is critically important.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of ideas that never make it to the market. It's not because they're bad ideas, but it's usually because, the skill of the people behind it trying to make it an offering that makes sense and that's viable, they just may not have had the experience. And so it's just good for them to get the advice that they need to hopefully make them successful in the future.
You know, Patrick, in other countries, is it being accepted the way it is being here?
When you say is being accepted in reference to?
Yeah, the way it is, you speak globally about the topics related to medical technology innovation. In other countries, are they accepting it the way we accept it here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're very eager in other countries. I've had an opportunity to speak in Europe and Canada and the U.S. in the past, and I find that the difference sometimes between the American spirit and entrepreneurialism and as it's compared to other places, it is a little bit different. I think Americans are a little bigger risk takers, and they understand that there's not a safety net below them, so to speak, when they try something new, try to create something of value.
That is the key, isn't it, when we're talking something new. But we've got what you have, you've got it proven. You've got it scientifically set up right there where they know exactly what they're going to get, when they get it, quote unquote. And with what's going on today and technology, as rapid as it is, there's always change. So I think the great thing about your industry is that it's always open to change, something more, something better. Something different, something we hadn't seen before.
Yes, I totally agree.
Now, and then when you really come down to it, the essence of what you're doing, is there a lot of competition out there for you, or is it pretty limited in scope with what's offered out there as far as new medical technology?
Well, I think that, you never say there's not a lot of competition, because I'm always one to never underestimate what other people are thinking about in solving problems. With the Streamline IV suspension system, I think it's a very unique approach to an issue that's becoming a much bigger problem. And so we have seen other people try to break the code, so to speak, on that, and have not been successful. So we're very very optimistic on the fact that we've really settled in on a solution that we think will be very appealing. And the same is true for the Denervix device. We think that we have a product that will deliver a longer-lasting treatment for the pain associated with facet joint pain.
Wonderful. And by the way, I really appreciate what you guys are doing out there. Let me ask you, is there a website we can find you at?
Yes, you see us at medovex.com. That's M like in Mary, E-D-O, V like in Victor, E-X.com. We're also traded on the NASDAQ. Under M, D like in David, V like in Victor, X like in X-ray. And please reach out to us through our contact mechanisms on our website, or give us a call direct if we can be of any help.
Yeah, and Patrick Ullman, if anybody missed the website here, it'll be up on our website for a long time. And thank you so much for doing what you do and spending your time with us today.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Have a wonderful evening.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back. I'm Michael. You're listening to The Michael Dresser Show. Abigail Steinberg with us, the author of Recipe for Success, an insider's guide to bringing your natural food to market. She began her career at Zevia, helping it become the fastest growing natural product in the country. She's worked as a successful consultant and a senior manager in the natural food industry for almost a decade now. And let us say, Abigail, hi, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
By the way, what a great idea. You know, we keep talking about we, the public, you know, eat better, fresher foods, grow your own. But very rarely does anybody think about actually bringing that in as a business.
You know, it's true, but the people who just catch that moment, you know, like the way Bob Dylan catches a song, he even says, you know,
sure.
It's when you find that moment, you find that product, and you say, hey, you know what, there's a void out there. There's something that needs to be filled. And that is the moment that you know you might have something, and if you jump on it, you know, I've seen it happen many times over.
Yeah. Oh, and very important also, you know, to that roadmap of yours from kitchen to the customer shelf, it's knowing the market. And most people don't know the market. How to become the expert on the product shelf, to find out what kind of packaging, what kind of pricing, and how to stand apart from the competition. That in and of itself, somebody's got a great idea, but quote-unquote, what do you do after you have the idea?
Right. Well, that's it. Sometimes you have to do something as basic and simple, and it sounds simple, but it really is to walk into the grocery store and say, okay, this is a section I see myself in. Well, where do I see myself in this section? And that's, but the buyer will even ask you, well, where do you fit in this schematic? You know, how do you see yourself? How do you put yourself apart from all that? And if you can answer that and have an answer, a really good answer to that, you have something.
You know, Abigail, the big fear with most people going into business, and it doesn't matter what it is, small product, big product, service, whatever, they're afraid of that word selling.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're dealing with something that you're dealing with, that should sell itself, with the exception of the marketing.
Exactly. Like with Zevia, I mean, the catch was, you know, Derek Newman had come up with a brilliant idea that he said, hey, you know, I want to create a soda with no phosphoric acid, you know, with stevia, which is actually good for you. You know, and he said, hey, I want to create something that would be an alternative to diet soda because my wife's having headaches from diet soda. So he created it for her. And when they realized they had something special, it just dawned upon him, and he went for it. And it really turned out well. So when I was helping them sell it, it was such an easy sell. I mean, they say, what's different? Well, there's no phosphoric acid. It's natural soda. Well, we don't have anything like that. We have a good space for you. You just create your own category. Congratulations. You know,
yeah,
that's amazing
when
you can.
Oh, absolutely. But the first step, you know, and you think about this, you've also got to get FDA approved, don't you?
Yes, absolutely.
What is that?
And
do
you also
do I have
to
go through to do
that? Packaging. What's that?
Oh, I said, how do I do that? What's my first step?
Well, your first step is to decide what your packaging is itself. So once you have decided, okay, is it going to be a bottle? Is it going to be a can? Is it going to be a jar? Is it going to be in a, you know, cellophane? Is it, you know, so you decide what that is. And once you've decided and created your package and you're feeling comfortable with that and you really are comfortable with your formulation, that is when you send it to the FDA. I really ask people to spend a little bit more time in research and development, R&D, because it really gives you time to test it a little bit around just to make sure people respond to your package and the formula. You know, you can do that on a flea market. You can do it all over the place, and you can get a good survey. And then when you invest in the FDA, you know, that's the time.
Sure. And then there's certain foods like organic, non-GMO, kosher foods, et cetera, that they have to be certified. And that in and of itself, I imagine most people have no idea before you put it on the shelf.
Oh, and that's good. That is a really good point, because a lot of people think, hey, it's organic. I know it's organic. Here, look, I got off my farm. Well, you know, it's not just as simple as that. You do have to get certification, and that takes time. It does take financial, you know, it takes money. And but it's important because a lot of companies, such as, you know, Whole Foods, you know, there's companies like that really demand certification like that to join the market. Whole Foods is not as strict, but they, you know, there's a lot of them that will be asking for certified organic, like Jimbo's, and because they want to give that to their customers. Their customers are demanding it, but they want to see proof of it, and that's the only way you can prove it is with certification.
Okay, let's say I've got the approval, I got the certification, comes the next step, that's distribution. Here I am with a wonderful product, and what do I do with it? How do I distribute it? Where do I go?
That's a good question. Well, let's say, okay, so I have this character I created in my book called Michael's Perfect Pickles. He has this amazing pickles. So he says, I'm going to have to figure this out. So let's say you've got your FDA, you've got your UPC code, you're ready to go. You can go to places like Clark's, like Mother's, and you can say, hey, I have this item, and, you know, I could sell it. And they say, okay, I'll give you this chance. And they will often give local products and independent products with great ideas a chance. They'll just say, I'll give you a chance. We'll find you a space. You have your certification. We want you. And they'll support you. And then through them, you get a little bit of a brand name. Now, they could buy direct. Or, because what will happen is you have to have customers like them, you know, to get distribution. But, you know, a lot of times they're like if you went to Mother's and they said yes, you could go back to the distributor and they say, okay, this is one of our good customers. Now we'll give you distribution. And then you have this opening of many, many companies within the distributor that you can network within to help get you more accounts, plus your own, you know, walking around to other natural stores using your success stories to build on, and you can really build it like blocks.
Yeah, just to add to that, that with those retailers, that after all this is done, to get in there and say, hey, look at me, I got something you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how do you get...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Are you saying, like, how do you get people to notice this in the store when now it's there?
No, how do you get the store to buy it when you're beyond, you know, when you're beyond the retailers? I'm sorry, when you're beyond the marketing.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Demos, promotion. Often they have in-store flyers, marketing, that kind of thing you can do. A lot of times they have events, which is good networking events. You can build a good fan base through that, through the stores that they create for their vendors to really help market themselves within the store.
Okay, now, when it really comes down to it, you're starting to learn. Do you do it by yourself, or do you start to hire people? Do you build and expand your base?
So good question. Yes, you start to expand your base is a great idea. I mean, you need to duplicate yourself once you get past a certain point. Like I would say, like if you're getting past a couple of hundred stores, you know that you're going to start to need help. You know, it's just going to be inevitable. And if you want to grow at a rapid rate, you can do so by, you know, hiring someone on the other side of the coast. Let's say you're West Coast, maybe get someone in the East Coast, you know, to be working that market for you. And that way, you know, you can build together that way. And then you start getting maybe some sales reps.
Where was it for you that your light bulb went on when you decided, hey, this is something I want. I can do this. I'm going to do something with it. Where was it for you when you decided to really get into this and work with it?
You mean into the marketplace or the product?
The idea of selling the natural foods, et cetera.
Well, you know, it's really, that's a good question, actually, because I was working in the film industry. I was making NFL films. I was, you know, dabbling about, you know. But what happened is someone said, hey, do you want to, you know, go to this health fair and work with this independent product? And this is in 2006, so natural foods was just really, really building up. You know, it was coming through, but it was just becoming a point where, wow, this is a booming industry. And I found it exciting, a group of people together who wanted to break through in the industry and break great grounds all over the world. I thought that was the most amazing, amazing mission statement to cure people of the diet soda habit. So I just went for it. It was a very exciting journey. I mean, I love film production, but I found this just as exciting because you were out there just making it happen and seeing your success as it goes. And that's another thing. You can really tell with your product, and a lot of people hang on to a dream too long. You know, like what happens is certain products, you can really tell when they're a hero. Like, I mean, I see the products come out and it's just a great response. You know, people are responding to it. The sales are just moving. And then there's ones that go out there and it's a couple of years and it's still just not catching on in any way, shape, or form, you know? So.
But, okay, is that the time to move on to somebody bigger? That isn't time to quit, is it?
Yes. Now, Zevia went on to do great things well beyond me, and they've doubled and quadrupled their valuation since then, and now they're a worldwide name. They don't need to quit, but there are companies out there that do start, and they have sort of a fad-like product, and it's not quite fitting in and doing well. There is a time you have to quit, and I've seen companies just keep pushing it and just spending all their reserves and other people's reserves just to keep pushing a product that doesn't really move. So that's the tough part, too.
There's a time thing here. Where do you identify when and where, when partnering with a broker can be, you know, your next step up? And I think more important than that, everybody runs into this, how do you select the right people to work with?
That's a good, yeah. Well, selecting the right people to work with is interesting because when you're creating your product and you're getting out there, people have their strengths and weaknesses. They have their relationships with this person, that person. So when you hire someone, you have to make sure that they have the contacts. You don't, you know, they have the ideas that you don't, you know, someone who can really take you to the next level. And when you get someone like that under your belt and you get a good sales team who believes in your product, I mean, there's just really, it's really basically the ceiling's the limit.
Sure.
Now, the thing is I find that there are products that if it doesn't catch on after about a year, it's usually a sign that it's not going to happen. I mean, there are products out there that try for a couple years, but I think it's usually around the 12 months of distribution that if it's just not catching on, I don't think it will, you know.
Okay, now, trade shows, very important. How do you find the right ones to appear at? I've seen people for so many years with products, services, books, and they go to the wrong place at the wrong time, and it's a waste of time. How do you know which ones that you can get your real value out of?
You know, I find that there are a lot of trade shows, and it's kind of like you go out there and you're thinking, this is going to be a big trade show, and 12 customers come up to your booth all day.
Yeah.
Now, the one that I know tried and true without a doubt is Expo West. If you don't have a big budget, that is the one to invest in, 100% Expo West in Anaheim.
Is that a once a year?
It's once a year. It's in March. And it's the one that basically any buyer and any retailer who's any retailer at all will be at that show at one day that weekend. So that's a very, very important one to market yourself in and spend some time really, you know, taking some time thinking about your strategy when you go out to something like that. But you must, and I repeat, must have distribution before you go into something like that. You don't want to go to a trade show without a distributor, such as a Unify and Nature's Best, or Nature's Best powered by KEHE, because if you don't have Nature's Best powered by KEHE or UNFI, you will not make any sales at the Expo West, whereas if you have those distributors, you have the best chance of closing deals there or just after.
Oh, okay. Let me go all the way back to the beginning. You know, many people have an idea, but they're afraid of the idea only because of their fear of the unknown. You know, what's going to happen now? Where do I go? Et cetera, et cetera. How many ideas do you think get wasted every day because they don't know where to go?
You know, there could be many. I mean, it could be as simple as someone's great sauce that they make for their friends and family every day. And, you know it's something special, but they just don't know where to go with it. And people say, hey, you should borrow that. There are items. I mean, let's face it. There are a lot of good sauces on the market. There's a lot of good, you know, drinks on the market. But when you get something that's really stand out, everyone starts talking about it. Like, I can tell you the one standout, like Follow Your Heart Veganaise. They had the brilliant idea to get mayonnaise that is vegan, and they just took that market. They took the corner market. They knew that they had it, and they dominated. Others are coming in a little bit, but there's just no comparison to the original. They became the original ketchup of veganaise.
You know what I love today? Most people are really getting to a point where they're watching where they eat. You know, they're going to natural, organic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because there's such garbage out there in the industry that a lot of it is just, it's not unhealthy. I mean, it's not healthy. And it's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars at the hospitals and doctors by the time you're done fixing yourself. So even if you spend a couple more bucks on whatever it was that was natural, quote unquote, it'll save you money down the road.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because the more you eat natural, the better your health will be ultimately. I mean, I know when you go out for that really greasy meal, you always feel a little heavy and bad for it. And it's not even guilt. It's really actually what your body's feeling. You're feeling a little depressed because your body is feeling a little depressed from it. So when you're going to the natural and you're having one of those really nice, healthy meals at Mother's, you know, you feel like you come out and you're just feeling good. You know, and then people get addicted to that, and that's what's happening with the supplements.
Yeah.
They're getting addicted to that feeling that they're getting and the nice natural excitement high that they're getting every time they try these supplements and these great foods.
Now, by the way, do you have a recipe for success at the Natural Products Expo West and all of those places? Because when you really come down to it, it might be something you walk through there, get an idea, but then lose the idea because you're not sure, again, where to go. I think it's so important.
Mm-hmm. You know, I would think that we should promote Recipe for Success at Expo West. It would probably be a good place. I have so many companies.
When it really comes down to it, because there will be a lot of people who will go there, have an idea, but again, they get stuck. What do you do now? I think that's really important. There's so many people who could go into business that don't go into business because there's no one there like yourself with the people you work with to hold their hand and lead them through to do what they need to do to be successful at it.
Exactly. And this book, what I wanted to do, because I've seen these mistakes happen again and again of in the industry, and I realized there was not one guide out there that actually explained step-by-step how to deal with places like Unify, how to deal with a KEHE, how to, you know, what to do when you're going from the trade show. You know, a lot of people do go to trade shows without distributors. They don't realize it's a mistake. They just think they're getting themselves out there and picking up stores, but they're not. They're just one of many accounts out there that don't have a distributor that doesn't interest them because they want to just work with, you know, companies that are ready. You know, Sprouts doesn't want to hear that you'll be ready in a few months. They're just, are you ready? Great, now we can talk, you know.
Yeah, no, and I really believe if you got it out, then I got the name of your second book.
Yes?
This is what could have happened if you'd have listened.
Well, I'm actually penning the master's edition of this book because I'm talking about conglomerates. But hey, you know, I would love to do that.
By the way, that'd be a great tagline.
Have you didn't listen. Well, I talk about that too, because my fictitious character falls apart a few times, making mistakes. Because the thing is, these are $100,000 mistakes, but if there's no guides out there, what do? You have no literary guide to say, this is what you need to do. And that's why my book is the first, to just tell someone simply, this is what you do. And it's conversational. It's not confusing. It's not dry. You're having a good time, but you're understanding what you need to do. And now just take those steps, and you'll be successful, again, as long as your product does speak to the market.
And we hear you loud and clear. Okay, we're out of time now. So let me ask you this, Abigail, website we can find you at?
We are selling Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com. And I also have a signing going on at Barnes & Noble in Santa Monica on the 14th of January. In case anyone wants to come out to that, that's from 6 to 9 p.m. with a string quartet. And we're going to have a beautiful little experience at the Barnes & Noble in Santa Monica.
You need a simple website.
I'm curious.
After shows, just direct people to the website. It's easier than Barnes & Noble and the rest of them, because you've got a wonderful idea, and we don't want to get anybody lost on the way there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways.
So I will get that so simplified.
Yes. And by the way, if anybody missed Barnes & Noble and the rest of them, find our website now, and it'll be there. And I want to say thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello? Hello.
Welcome back. I'm Michael. You're listening to The Michael Dresser Show. Angela Howell with us, the author of Finding the Gift, Daily Meditations for Mindfulness. Born in Mason City, Iowa, moved 13 times and attended 8 schools before she graduated high school in Tennessee, a year early, by the way, with honors. And she went on to earn a marketing degree at Middle Tennessee State University. She's been on a long road now to personal freedom, finding God and finding the gift. She survived a long battle with anorexia and bulimia and went on to earn multiple sales awards and top recognition with several Fortune 500 companies. Angela has sworn off God and religion years prior. Due to childhood extremes, ironically, the eating disorder that almost killed her gradually brought Angela back to God and greater fulfillment, by the way, of the 12-step recovery approach, which truly restored her life. And let us see, Angela, hi, welcome to the show.
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me today. I'm glad to talk with you.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. You know, finding the gift, life is a gift, isn't it?
It is when we're looking for it. We can go through looking for gifts, or we can feel like life is happening to us. We really have a choice.
No, absolutely. And, you know, with daily meditations, and I really believe the word mindfulness is really there. You know, I probably broach this subject a million times a year, but it's so critical because most people run through life living 6 months ago or 2 months ahead, and they totally and completely miss what's going on today.
Absolutely. I have a reminder sometimes when I feel like I'm doing what you said, I'm back there or I'm over here, is to think about my shoes, to look down. Where are my shoes? You know, where are my feet planted at this very moment? And to get the rest of me there.
You know, interestingly enough, if you look at it a little different way, before you paid attention to your shoes, they didn't exist, did they?
No. I mean, really, how many of us right now, if I said close your eyes, tell me what watch you're wearing or tell me what shirt you have on? So many of us, I mean, I'm guilty, wouldn't be able to tell.
Sure. And the other side of that, unless you paid attention to it, you weren't thinking about it. And if you weren't thinking about it, it just wasn't there, was it?
Nope. We're just ahead a lot of the times.
Same thing in a relationship or being at work, which is a relationship also. If you're not paying attention to that person, they don't exist. And that's where the problem starts.
I have an entry that one reminds me of talking about presenteeism. It's a sister of absenteeism. Presenteeism is you're there, but you're not there. Your body's there, but your mind isn't there.
Yeah, and that's when it really comes down to it. It's called mindfulness, and things like yoga, like other things along that line allows you to concentrate. And we don't spend much of the day, if any at all, concentrating. Too busy. Get to the microwave.
Right.
What got you into this? Where was that transition for you when you came back? You found yourself.
It's definitely been a long journey. As you mentioned, I'm in recovery and have been for over 20 years from anorexia and bulimia, and that put me on a path of recovery and pursuing consciousness and spirituality at a very early age, and personal growth, reading books. And it processed to get more present and to kind of jump out of that rat race, you know, that we're all geared. Life is about going to school, getting a job, getting on a path. It's just one thing after another. And so much of the time we miss the on the way parts, which is the real life. And so I'm grateful for my eating disorder, as hard as it was to walk through that and to come out of it, because it did wake me up to what life is really about. And it certainly didn't happen just overnight. It's been a gradual process, and it continues to happen. And I hope I'm always on the path. But I probably, 2003, I was coming out of a really hard time and noticed this first metaphor in a tree that just grabbed my attention and gave me a lesson for life. And then, you know, that was pretty cool, and I wrote about it. I wrote a poem about it. And then in 2005, life really was crashing down all around me in many ways. And I started seeing these things in trees and cats and clouds and car washes. And that's really, it just grabbed my attention. It really was involuntary. Are you still there? I don't know if you can hear me, but I can't hear you. I think I've lost you. I'm going to hang up and try to call you back.
No, wait, don't go away.
Oh,
I was paying attention
here you
to the
are.
Phone. The phone wasn't, yes. All of a sudden, I heard this beep, 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 and gone we were. But I'm back.
Oh, I'm sorry. I finished talking and you were gone.
I'm concentrating now. I'm with you. Okay.
This is about mindfulness. Right. This was a test. How many of them even know that we were gone?
Yeah.
Very, very
probably
smart
not.
Test, Michael.
Yeah, because in the old days, people used to sit and stare at a radio. They listen to it, concentrate.
Mm.
Not today,
mm-hmm.
in the background. And unless there's certain something that specifically relates to you, you don't listen to it. You walk away from it. And in today's world, it's that if it's something about you, if the audience recognize something about themselves that they weren't paying attention to, all of a sudden they're listening to the radio. And I think that's really where the key is. And I would venture to guess that the subject matter that we're dealing with right now, Angela, we're talking about 90% of the population out there.
Right, if not even more, unfortunately. And you
yes.
know, I find myself among them and have to work on it all the time.
So, by the way, did you get mad at God?
Oh, did I get mad at God? Well, I
yeah.
had a season, yes. I, as a child, I started out in a calm Lutheran experience. You know, in Iowa,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of Lutherans. And my family decided to join a traveling ministry when I was 5 years old. We sold everything we owned and bought a camper, I think, at the time. And for 3 years, we pitched tents and did revivals and walked the streets and ministered. And sometimes the adults got arrested. And it was a very interesting experience, led, once we got out of that, into a little bit of a calm season and then back into a really extreme season. And I saw a lot of things that, that just didn't work for me. A lot of really strict legalism and what I felt was hypocrisy and just things that were really extreme without going into in detail.
Yeah.
And I made a decision at 13 that if this is God and if this is religion, I want nothing to do with it. And I literally was in a dress. It was an evening service, probably a week-long revival. I took my high heels off and ran 3 miles in a dress at night away from that church.
Yeah.
And stayed gone for a good 10 years or more.
Yeah, but see, you came back, but you came back 10 times more powerful.
It was only through the 12-step program. It let me fire my God of my past and let me create in my mind the God that I would want to have. And, of course, the God
sure.
that I created is the real God in my, you know, the God that I believe in.
Let me tell you what I found years ago, years and years and years ago, that you have free will. You know, it's as simple as you don't want war on the planet, don't blame anybody, don't do it. Okay, but it's not quite that simple to accomplish. So if you have free will, I believe very strongly that God never says no. You want happiness? Yes. You want sadness? Yes. You want pain? Yes. It goes on and on. Pleasure? Yes. So you get to decide, and so many times we get caught in that confusion, and we have to let go to be able to say, let the real God, the real essence of your centered self come forward, because life is nothing more than a big lesson, and then when you learn it,
yes.
you're blessed, you get another one.
Yes, that's just perfectly said. I love that. And I specifically wrote my book as a self-help you know, meditation type book, because if, you know, in the time, in that season of my life, anything that smelled of Christianity or even had the word God, I would have shunned it. And I think so many people, as we talk about mindfulness, so many people are on autopilot, and they're also not in tune to the spirit. And I define my in my book, the spirit is that spark inside you that makes me different from you. You know, that makes me want to maybe paint or write, that maybe makes you want to do talk radio. And so many people just don't even, you know, oh, my goodness, and I talk a lot about dreams. You know, if I ask somebody, what do you really want to do? They don't know, because they've shut that part of themselves off for so long. And and so I like to talk a lot about spirituality, but in the sense of the spirit of that person, if that makes any sense.
Now, if I give it to you in another angle, and this is major worldwide, okay? If you look at what's going on here, we have more and more people leaving churches, synagogues, et cetera, in the United States. So our identity with, you know, with church and synagogue and with God is starting to separate. Now, on the other side, ISIS, the enemy out there, that are killing Christians and people and little kids and whatever, they're doing it under the auspices of God. So while they're pulling everybody together under God, we seem to be separating. And that, in and of itself, if we're not careful, could be the one cause that would cause our destruction or downfall.
Right, right.
We're losing our identity, and they're gaining one.
Yeah, it's very tough. I my pastor did a recent series of messages talking about how some Christians or other religions, that they're actually hurting more than helping. I'm sure the intention is always to help, but I think it's an interesting thing that you're talking about.
Sure, I was channel surfing one Sunday, and I came across this program, and the preacher was rolling, and the first thing out of his mouth which caught me was, you know, call in for your miracle, have your credit card ready, okay? And then, I know, it gets better. And then I'm looking at him, and right behind him, I swear, there was a sign, and it said, miracle, not guaranteed.
Yeah.
So you couldn't get your money back. Yeah. I mean, see, that's not God.
Yeah, and it's really hard if someone is just really seeking and searching, and they trip across something like that and get caught up. And unfortunately, and so I have such a heart for people who have been spiritually wounded. It's a deep wound. We hold people on religious platforms to a higher level, and when they fall short, it's a disappointment, you know, greater than just if my neighbor disappointed me.
Sure. Oh, no question about it. When it really comes down to it, feel inside. It's not somebody walking around where they have to throw money into it. It's not be this way, do this, or you know, God's going to get you. I really believe when it comes down to it, God is supposed to be out of love, not fear. And when you're running through life being afraid of, you know, what God's going to do to you if you don't do what God wants you to, that, Angela, that's human. That's a human thing. That's not a godly thing.
Right, right.
Why can't I love God instead of being afraid?
Right. I couldn't agree more. I've got a son. He's 19, and he's heard me say my whole life that, you know, if it smells like fear, shame, or condemnation, or guilt, you know, run the other way. You mean? So, yeah.
All of those are lessons. All of those are learning something. You know, if we have this problem, I can't tell you how many people over the years, they've gone through horrible experiences in their life. They've lost children. They've lost loved ones. They've lost, you know, so many things. And they went through, you know, the pain and the hurt. And when they came through it, they did something about it. They turned around and helped other people who were going through the same problems, so it wouldn't have that, you know, tremendous effect. And they left legacies. So they turned it around to something good. And I really believe no matter how bad it looks, that doesn't mean it's easy to go through. But it just, there's something for you to learn. Otherwise, it wouldn't be happening.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's been a lifetime for me of finding the gifts. I used to think, you know, when a traumatic thing would happen to me, that okay, well, that one that happened, you know, this year, that was enough for a lifetime, and then there's others. And but now I'm just grateful, because I could be just so bitter, you know, bitter and sad and angry at the world, but I am grateful that I had the ability to allow these to mold me into who I am today. And there is no greater honor than to be able to extend hope and healing to someone who's in a space that I was in several, you know, at some point in my past, to give that hand up. You know, we all need that. And I'm starting to share more about my book and getting feedback that, you know, doing book signings, I'm telling you what, it's the greatest sense of fulfillment to have just a moment where I can exchange a moment of hope with someone. It's just been, it's a wonderful, I'm just so blessed to be able to share my story and share my book, and to get to hear if people will open up to me during a book signing even, and tell me maybe one thing they're struggling with. And it just feels, you know, with all those things that I walk through, now I can be relatable to people, whatever they may be struggling with.
Yeah. No, absolutely no question about it. And when you really come down to it, life's okay.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
It really is. And it really is how you think about it, because one day I can feel great and the next day I can feel bad and nothing changed. The only thing that changed was my perspective. So I still have days like that where I wake up and I want to go back to bed. And so I have to do a little extra work on my mind that morning and get into a better space. And I have lots of things that I've written about, you know, how I personally do that to get back in touch with where my shoes are and where my heart is and what I have to be grateful for. Gratitude is a great way to get present and to change perspective.
Yeah. No, and I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. Now, we're about out of time. Oh, by the way, that's what you get for being human. Anyway, but I hear you loud and clear. But let me ask you, where do we get the book at? Website?
I tell you what, you can go to my website. That's a shorter link to save. And, of course, you can find the book on Amazon, and it's in bookstores. But you can go to my website, findingthegift.com, and there's a tab called FTG Book. You can read reviews from advanced readers. There's a link to the Amazon page. So, and as a bonus, I have a free ebook, 10 Secrets to Finding the Gift, that if you join the community and get the updates, you'll get sent that immediately.
Wonderful.
That's all on the website,
findingthegift.com. Angela, if anybody missed it, it's up on our site, and we'll be there for a long time.
Okay, thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Pleasure.
It sounds like we have written the same book. You're on the same page
Probably.
As me, and that was awesome.
Probably. Yeah, great. Okay, by the way, again, thank you so much for being here, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Michael. You do the same. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Welcome back. I'm Michael. You're listening to The Michael Dresser Show. Ronnie St. Pucci with us, the author of, this is the upcoming memoir, Lifting the Veil, A Life Reclaimed. And she's president and designer of St. Pucci, launched her global empire in the United States in 1985. Her vision was to create an avant-garde bridal culture, a culture line modern in styling, but classic in detail. And that vision has been realized in her collections today. Ronnie, hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. Lifting the Veil, A Life Reclaimed. How many people out there don't reclaim their life, and they move through life of what they could have been, would have, could have been, should have, and just miss the whole thing?
I mean, yes, more, you know, most of us do that, Michael, because we tend to always live in the past instead of moving forward. And in order to do that, I think we all need to come to terms with what happened, you know, and forgive everybody, because, and also actually, you know, own our own role in that entire drama.
Yeah, yeah. When you really come down to it, and but in living a life, cultures are so completely different. Arranged marriages, you know, here in the United States, it may happen, but it's not going to happen based on the culture that we grew up in. But there are cultures within the country that it happens with. Now, is that the best choice for American brides, or should they just be able to choose themselves?
Well, you know, I would say that for Americans and those who are born and raised here in the Western world, it's very difficult to fathom that the choice of their partner should be left to their parents or elders. But for the most part in Eastern cultures, this is what's happening. And 90% of marriages are arranged, you know, in like countries like
sure.
India, Pakistan. And literally the divorce rate is so low, Michael, it's like 1.1% divorce rate. So obviously that
sure.
says something about arranged marriages.
Okay, but
you
the
know,
divorce rate is major. Without the arranged, you know, there you're talking 50-60% first year, and there's so many single women today having kids because they don't want to get married anymore. It seems like it's leaving. So I think the big problem is, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's because we live in a zero tolerance society. We are not, you know, we are not willing to make an effort because marriage is work. You know, it does take
sure.
two, you know, to work at it. Although I have to say, even here, you know, you have Match.com, eHarmony.com, these online dating sites, you know, where people are finding their life partners and even marrying them, you know, there's quite a success rate here. So that is also considered, I would consider it as an arranged marriage.
No, different story, absolutely. See, I think the big problem that we have is this. You and I meet. I'm not going to show you who I am. I'm going to show you who I think you would like me to be. 6 months,
exactly.
a year down the line, when I'm comfortable with you and I start becoming
right.
Michael, you're going to say you're changed. You're not who you were. Yes, I am,
yeah.
but I'm not who I
yeah.
was trying to make you think I was.
Exactly. And, Michael, by the time I know who you are, Michael, it may take about 3 years.
You may not like me.
Least, you know?
yeah.
Exactly.
Okay,
yes, yes.
And very important thing that I think you cover, the 10 things you should know about your partner before saying, I do. Critically
yes.
important. And we don't ask those questions. What are we dealing with?
We, you know, in an age of easy divorces, short tempers, and low tolerance levels, we are unwilling to compromise, and we don't even know each other. You know, we just jump into a marriage, and we say, oh, yeah, you know, let's try it out. I mean, we're thinking that way, even though we are saying, you know, until death do us part. But the questions that we need to ask each other, you know, and is, you know, how well do we know each other's family or relationship to any of each family member? You know, we need to know the family. What about career? Do you know what he does for a living, or does he even care about your career? You know, and then you go to financial. How responsible is your partner with his or her money? Is he financially sound, or will he be depending on you to carry the household? Then you go to social, you say, okay, does he have friends or is he a loner and expecting me to fulfill all his needs for companionship? You know, and how stable is he emotionally? For all you know, he could be a psychopath or a sociopath, you know.
Sure.
And
yeah.
And what about respect? How does he treat you? How does he treat others in his life? There's so many variables, you know, that these are the questions that we need to be able to sit down and have an honest, you know, communication.
And I think one of the most important things that people run into problems with, they got to be right. Everybody's got to be right. They're so frightened of being wrong. They're so frightened of judgment.
Yeah.
You know, it's called, if you're not right, so what?
Yeah. I mean, the tolerance level is zero. Yes.
Yeah. And that's really key. I've seen people battle to prove they're right.
Yeah, and there's no communication.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
no,
you, Michael, we don't communicate. You know, we just shut down. When things go wrong, we just walk away.
Yeah, there's three parts of a word. No, you've got your dictionary definition, the literal translation of the word, and you got the underlying meaning of the word, and then there's the third part that most people miss completely, the state of mind of the receiver. Let's say
right.
You have a brand new outfit, and I walk into the room, and you're in a lousy mood, and it's a great outfit.
Right.
Well, the fight's going to start. So what? But if you're in a good mood, I'm going to say great outfit, and you're going to say thank you. So it's that third part that we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, sometimes we just interpret things, you know, in the wrong manner, like you said, you know, depending on the mood we are in.
Sure. I mean, that's really when it comes down to it. Now, very important also is recognizing these red flags. So now you've got the 10 questions, you know what to look for. You recognize it. What do you do then?
Well, you know, the problem is knowledge is power, Michael. You know, we tend to fix problems in a relationship after the fact. Now, wouldn't it be great if we could avoid the trauma and the heartache and the emotional angst by just becoming aware of the sort of person we decided to date and to be in a relationship with? So the red flags is, you know, okay, you know, I feel uncomfortable around him and concerned about something he has said or done. Or he reminds me of someone else I've known with a serious problem, and that makes me feel scared. Or I believe that I'm the only one who understands him. You know, I feel bad about myself when I'm in his company. Do I feel isolated from my friends and family because he expects me to spend all my time with him? So, you know, these are sociopaths, and you never know. You know, literally, there are 7 kinds of men to avoid. You know, there's the unavailable man, the addict, the needy man, the parental seeker who doesn't really want a partner but is looking for somebody to mother him or take care of him. Then there's the predator. You know, he has a very canny understanding of what makes you vulnerable. He seeks victims. So there are so many people out there that we don't even know who we are getting into a relationship with. You know, sometimes we, you know, just little red signs like, I feel uncomfortable with the amount of time he watches, you know, TV or what kind of program does he watch? You know, do they contain too much violence? And, you know, is he always like on pins and needles? And, you know, I mean, is he neglectful of his family, of his children, if he has children from a previous, you know, marriage? Is he making excuses, you know, every time that, you know, he's late? Or so these are all things, these are red flags that we tend to just ignore, just because maybe, you know, the question you ask, the major question is, am I in this relationship just because there isn't anyone else in my life at the moment?
Yeah, they're very important. Let's do a little bit of a twist on something. The knowledge, you know, the power in knowledge, it's not necessarily the knowledge where the power is. It's the it's the application of the knowledge is where the real power is. You got people with all this information running around. They don't do anything with it. And that's where I think it's critical. Now, to move this a little farther, and I know you addressed this, it's very important to find out about those family secrets that you need to know.
Yes. I mean, you know, I can tell you that the family secrets, you know, a lot of them we don't even know about our own parents, what they went through. You know, so how do we know what kind of background these families are, you know? I mean, I know for myself, I was with my parents recently in Bangkok. I'm from Thailand. And my mother was in the hospital. And, you know, I had almost a month with her, and I was able to ask her about her childhood and what she went through and, you know, and really get to know her. And it really made me realize why she was the way she was, and even my father, why they did what they did. You know, it was because they didn't know any better.
They were human beings. There were a couple who got into a relationship.
They did
that
the
only
best.
Knew what they
yeah.
were taught by their parents. Yeah.
Right, right.
And the only time that you could really get on a level playing field with a parent is when you become an adult. Because as a child,
exactly.
as a teenager, you're not going to comprehend what it is that they did and why they did it because you don't have the experience.
No, no. I mean, these are things that, you know, sometimes we are so, we live in a cocoon, Michael. You know, it's all about us. We don't even look outside ourselves. You know, we are so engrossed with our social media and with, you know, I mean, these are all artificial. This is an artificial world we are living in. And
yep.
for us to really go out and really question and ask and, you know, and really engage, I think that is the crucial thing to
yeah.
do any
and
successful relationship.
I think the person that you could trust will give you the answer that I'm going to give you. Ask me what my favorite subject is.
Yeah, what is it?
Me.
Yeah.
Me.
Exactly,
I mean,
exactly.
That's what you just said, yes. But when somebody
yeah.
knows that, it, you can deal
yeah.
with it. When they don't
yes.
know where the
yeah.
problem starts. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Knowledge.
Okay, so
knowledge.
Somebody,
you know?
Yes, yes. And it's what to do with it. Now, one
mm-hmm.
very important thing that you address is forgiveness. That's so very hard for people. But I can't forgive you for anything until I forgive me.
Yes. Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, how can you even move forward? You know, sometimes we say, yes, I forgive you, but we carry that with us until we die. I mean,
yeah.
I can tell you the biggest lesson that I learned, Michael, as I wrote my book, was about forgiveness. It was so therapeutic. I went through my entire life from my childhood, and I was able to feel compassion and bless everybody. You see, because hurt people. It's forgiveness
yeah.
is like a muscle that you have to keep growing. You know, it's a process that can take a lifetime or it can take mere minutes.
Yeah.
It depends on how ready you are.
And I think the biggest problem with what you're saying and everything you're saying, I totally 3,000% agree with. I mean, absolutely, is getting somebody else to fall in line with that same mindset. There's where the
yeah.
problems are. Now, if you got two people with the same mindset, you're okay. But unless you have it, it just isn't going to work.
No, it's no. really, and you know, you forgive not for them, you forgive for yourself so that you can move
sure.
on, you can be free. It's for your own peace.
Yep, because when it comes down to it, and I've felt this for years, you never give anybody anything. You know, he's talking about giving somebody a gift. No, you don't. You're giving
no.
it to yourself. It's how you feel about the way, how you feel about, you know, doing the gift, et cetera. So realistically,
right,
it all comes back to you. And when you
exactly.
realize that, you can change the world.
Yeah, yeah. And that forgiveness is a gift you give to yourself. The biggest gift, you know, that we can, I mean, it's the only way that we can move forward and have peace.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And when it comes right down to it, you know, lifting the veil is really where it is. It's tearing away the mask, the one that you've covered yourself with. So nobody will see who
right.
you are. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, these are secrets that I would have never, you know, the thought of writing my memoir was a very scary project, I can tell you. As someone who has lived for years
sure.
with the secret of having been abused, I was hesitant because, about the repercussions, you know, it would have on my life and all the others involved. But
yeah.
I believe the time is now. You never know whose life you will change by speaking up. You know, but nothing
yeah.
will ever change if I continue to keep quiet.
Absolutely. It's what somebody has to hear out there, and it's got to relate to them personally. And realistically, what you're talking about relates to more people than not because of the
mm-hmm.
culture that we live in and because we what we created, what we build, what we make right or wrong, the rules we live by now, which some of those rules are ridiculous. I really believe
yeah.
the kids growing up today missed out growing up when I grew up, you know, many, many years ago. It was a whole different world. We didn't get into trouble.
Yeah.
We got into mischief. A couple of boys got into a fight. Somebody kicked somebody. Mm-hmm. It's out. That's not fair, and you quit. But that's
right.
We don't get guns and go by the house and start shooting.
Oh God, no. And you know, it's we are living in a society that's just, you know, that has really, I mean, we've lost, you know, compassion. We've lost. I mean, you know, we are only going by how we feel, and you know, what we feel is not always the right way, you know, to deal with life.
Sure, and a great example of that is what's going on in the universities right now. It's all over the news. You know, while they're out there screaming and yelling about whatever, and people who are paying taxes are paying for their education. I wonder what would happen if somebody said, "Well, if you don't like it, we're going to close the school."
And again, Michael, we come back to forgiveness. You know, it's because they are so hurt that they are not able to face what it is that's hurting them, and there's no communication, communication, so they cannot analyze exactly what's going on, and they cannot forgive and be at peace.
How do you forgive what you don't know is there? Oh boy. Okay. Right. Ronnie, we're starting to run out of time, and we could talk about this all night. But website we can find you and the upcoming memoir on.
Yes, it's rainy@rainysaintpucci.com. The website is rainysaintpucci.com. And all my
Wonderful.
Facebook and social media is, I think, available on my website.
Great. And by the way, if somebody misses the website, it's up on ours and it's going to stay there.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Michael. Take care. Bye.
Oh, my pleasure. My goodness. Bye-bye. I'm Michael Dresser.
And I am Radio Susie.
And that, my friends, is...
It is a wrap.
The music softly dies, but I hope for your smile.